More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we like to call it, real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a moderate Democrat living in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Molly Malloy Cooper. I'm a conservative capitalist from Columbus, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider. I'm a very, very, very liberal Democrat in Kensington, Maryland.
I'm DJ McGuire, a very, very, very conservative Democrat from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Helena Henry. I think I'm a conservative evangelical from Colleyville, Texas, but some weeks I just don't know.
I remember what
this
that's
being
like.
One of them. And guess what, gang? This is the 100th episode of the More Perfect Union podcast. So congratulations to everyone.
Woo!
The More Perfect Union is one of the fastest growing podcasts on iTunes. The More Perfect Union can also be found on YouTube, Facebook, and at our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can find host blogs and commentary. DJ has been writing a lot for us. So has Rebecca. So check out those things. And let's jump right into it. Boy, we always say it's been a busy week, but this is the busiest of busy. So let's start with the introduction of Robert Mueller as the special counsel, no longer a special prosecutor, but a special counsel in the, what are we going to call this thing? Russiagate? I don't know what we're calling it.
Let's not call it a gate. I feel like that's been done. You know, the gate thing is over. This is a probe. This is like an alien anal probe.
Yeah,
this is just gonna.
I hope so.
Yeah, As for Robert Mueller being appointed as the special counsel, the first thing I did was go to a couple of friends of mine. One who's a current Justice Department employee, one who's a former Justice Department employee. They both have long tenures. At least one of them would have been there at the same time Mueller was sitting in the FBI director's chair. And I said, "What do you guys think of this?" And they're lawyers, and they're both as liberal as I am. And their comment was, "Oh my God, this is such a good choice." So he is so respected here in town that, nobody can fault him on his integrity or on his abilities.
Now, have you heard that the White House has a new strategy to try to save Kushner and possibly Manafort by claiming that because Mueller's law firm, of course, he resigned from the law firm when he was appointed to the special counsel, but his past employer, his law firm, also represented Kushner and Manafort on separate matters, and they're trying to argue that ethically he should not be investigating them. Therefore, he cannot investigate them in the Russia probe.
So let me just say that it's weeks like these that make me doubt how much longer, I don't know, I can survive as an American. I'll defend them for a second. The law firm that Mueller's at is WilmerHale. And typically what happens is there are rules both within the jurisdiction that they practice and also rules that sort of govern how the firm operates that affect relationships with clients. And this is really a conflicts issue. So I think what their argument is, think about it this way. If you represent Amazon, hypothetically, you represent Amazon in one matter, perhaps ebooks litigation. And then in another matter, you have Apple suing Amazon for something unrelated, right? Those two matters aren't connected, but you already have a client relationship with Amazon. So query whether you should be adverse to Amazon in a different case. And so that's what's going on with Kushner and Manafort and this Mueller business. Now, Mueller has resigned from WilmerHale, and I imagine that they've set up a lot of screens, you know, in addition to that, so that any associates who were working on the matters wouldn't come anywhere near it. But, you know, since he has resigned and he's on his own, it shouldn't actually be an issue. But there's something somewhat legitimate there.
Well, it's that the White House actually created a regulation pertaining to a cooling off period for anybody who was in the private sector. They can't investigate anyone who was affiliated with their firm for 2 years. I think it's a 24-month cooling off period without a special waiver from the Department of Justice. And it seems like Rosenstein should be able to supply that. However, you know, what the White House is trying to do is cast a pall over Mueller. I'm not sure they're actually going to take any action. It might just be a PR stunt.
It really says something, though, when an administration comes forward and tries to use the notion that the special counsel is too close to the targets of the investigation to be trusted. What they're really saying is, oh, yeah, you know, this guy really won't tell you if he's guilty. Oh, wait, never mind.
Right, it's ridiculous. It's the reverse of what it should be.
Yeah, no, this is utterly absurd. The fact of the matter is, if this really were an issue, it would be Trump's critics who would be complaining. None of them are complaining, as far as I know. So, yeah, this is, you know, tempest in a teapot. Let's get on with the probe. It's going to take a while to dig all this stuff out anyway, to tease everything. There's an open question as to whether we get anything besides a report and some indictments of a bunch of campaign level officials. The stuff that people care about, for lack of a better term, is there something that they find that is impeachable against the president? And if so, it'll take, my guess is, even in the 21st century, it'll still take at least a year to find that, maybe two. So let's just let the investigation go forward. We should all feel free to comment on it. Let the investigation go forward does not mean shut the hell up. It means let the investigation go forward, and we all yammer as we normally do.
Well, I don't expect Mueller to give any updates unless there's an act of Congress insisting that he does. The order that was written by Rosenstein sounds like he can work in pretty much silence and just do his job without interference from the press. Right. He doesn't owe Congress anything. So we can speculate all we want, but I think Bob Mueller's going to be sitting in an office not even blinking as we do it. Or Mueller. I'm sorry. I'm saying his name wrong.
One thing, and I'm copying you, Rebecca.
I thought it was Mueller.
I thought it was like Bueller, but I don't know.
But it's not. It's Mueller.
I've never seen that movie, so I actually don't know.
Is that so young, oh my God, you are young.
So young. Is that it? Anyway, so one thing that is interesting about the authorization that Rosenstein gave is he doesn't give, now I'm afraid to say his name, I'm going to keep saying Mueller, as much authority and freedom from the administration as he could have. And I imagine, you know, Rosenstein is obviously brilliant. I imagine that was an intentional choice on his part. Curious just, you know, why that would be. But, we should keep in mind that Mueller does still report to the Department of Justice and by extension to the administration, to the president. He is not a truly independent counsel or independent prosecutor.
But on this matter, Sessions has recused himself. So he's the highest authority within the Justice Department because Sessions allegedly recused himself, Jefferson Beauregard.
Right. But he still goes to Trump.
Right.
And
he still goes
to
Trump.
There was a law. Yeah. There was a law that expired in 1999 that set up the whole independent prosecutor and independent counsel schematic. Congress just let it go because both administrations had been harmed by it, and Scalia and a dissent from one case agreed. But that would have been, at least I think in this situation, perhaps a preferable setup, because the independent counsel would have been governed by a three-judge panel and would not report to the administration in any way. Here we've got a special counsel who doesn't have as nearly as much autonomy, but we'll have to see where that leads.
Yes, but the only president who attempted to muscle out a special prosecutor in the history of the United States is also the only president who was forced to resign due to what the special prosecutor was investigating. And that tells us that there legally Donald Trump may have the authority to get this special to get Mueller, Mueller, whatever the hell his name is, bounced to special prosecutor. But he doesn't have the political authority to do that, because Richard Nixon didn't have the political authority to do that, because the successor to Archibald Cox, Leon Jaworski, essentially continued to run the investigation that forced Nixon out of office anyway.
Now, what about this person of interest that everybody started speculating about just as Air Force One took off for Europe and places in the Middle East? Everyone kind of knows it's Jared Kushner. We're not supposed to say that because he hasn't officially been named yet. But all indications would suggest that he is the person close to Trump who's also a senior Oval Office advisor.
Yeah, yes. He was named by The Independent, which is a British newspaper. This is why I read British news first, people, because that way I actually know what the hell's going on in this country.
Counter to that, DJ, I knew it before The Independent published it, because the New York Magazine reporter whose tweet they cited, I saw the tweet. Boom! Twitter.
Nicely done.
And I knew it because Rebecca told me.
Wait, let me, Rebecca okay. told you something she didn't tell me?
I can top you all. I can top you all. Remember, I know you remember this. Remember 4 weeks ago when Nunez, whatever his name is, went to the White House in that secret mission and he was shown some secret information that supposedly proved that the Obama administration had been surreptitiously recording or checking on someone in the Trump administration.
I said
at that time it was Jared Kushner. And I'll bet you that's whose name was on that document.
So you think Nunes knows Kushner's the person of interest and he was trying to warn the administration about it?
I think, let's put it this way. Kushner is up to his eyeballs in this.
And that is very, very bad for Donald Trump because there's no daylight between him and Kushner. Like if it was Flynn, if it was Manafort, if it was Lewandowski, he could say, oh no, they had those relationships prior to getting involved with me and they're just acting on that other stuff from another lifetime. It's
Kushner's
not me.
Kushner is my age.
But Kushner is only here because of his proximity to Donald Trump due to his marriage to his daughter. He doesn't have a political lifetime behind him with all these relationships developed. Anything that Kushner does taints Trump very directly.
And what happens if Trump is put in the position of having to cut loose Kushner to save his presidency, but that means he's also, you know, throwing under the bus his son-in-law.
Well, and his administration and any chance at like a normal presidency.
I think that ship has sailed. You know. Normal presidency is not on the agenda.
No.
I just said any chance.
I do think, however, that as Democrats, we need to we have our own responsibilities here. And one of them is, first and foremost, which I don't think we're doing, is laying down the policy framework for why this is bad. The reason people were so upset about Watergate wasn't because of arguments over whether or not it was criminal, but because Richard Nixon was clearly trying to put a thumb on the scales in the 1972 election. That just struck people as unfair. And it struck people as so unfair that Nixon ended up acting to cover it up in a way that was criminal. The reason Bill Clinton largely survived the Whitewater investigation was because it took a while for people to understand, and many still don't understand, that it was about bleeding a savings and loan dry and then getting $50 million from the federal taxpayer to bail it out. That message never really got cut through to the American public. We need to make sure the American people understand that whatever the legal minutiae is involved here, whatever sort of issue that is, the fact of the matter is we have an administration that genuinely believes Vladimir Putin is a good guy, and that is a very, very, very serious problem. We need to explain to the American people why Russia is a hostile power, not a friendly power, what damage it is doing around the world, what damage it is doing to us, et cetera, et cetera. We need to keep talking about it, and we need to talk about it more. We can't just hope that they find something illegal. We've got to make sure the American people say, you know, even if it wasn't a crime, it was a gigantic mistake, and we want to make sure that nobody does this again. So that even if Trump does make it to 2020, which I still think is the way you bet, that we as Democrats can make sure that the American people say he's not making it to 2021 because we don't want an administration this close to Russia, period, whether it's legal or illegal.
And I think I think you're right, Eugene. I think that not only is it likely that you're going to have to make it to 2020, I think that's what's going to happen for a lot of reasons. One, the left has to get their narrative straight here. It can't be that Donald Trump is both a bumbling fool who's incompetent and incapable of doing anything and can't even spell the word counsel correctly in his tweets, which, you know, he couldn't, side note.
That's a tough one, though.
At the same time. Total tangent. I will say spelling mistakes, I judge people so hard for those. And if you can't spell a word like counsel and publicly, I mean, I can't with him. Anyway, moving on. It can't be that he's both an incompetent bumbling fool and also a Marvel supervillain a la Lex Luthor. I don't know if Lex Luthor is Marvel, but humor me for a second. It can't be that it's both.
Yeah. Okay, DJ actually got a rash listening to Helena make that mistake. that was one of those nerd moments. He could not tolerate that.
We all have our thing. I have spelling mistakes. He has, you know,
superhero mistakes.
Superhero assignments. Yeah. It can't be both. It can't be that he's incompetent and he's a supervillain. So it's one or the other. And we have to think about that as we look into this Russia thing. My guess is, It's probably the former. I don't think he is a Marvel supervillain, and therefore I don't think that this investigation is going to pull up anything that's going to be at the level that's going to get you to impeachment. I also don't think you're going to have like a high crimes and misdemeanor scenario here. The other thing is when you look at obstruction of justice, to make this not boring, I'll do it really quick. There's what's known as a mens rea requirement, which is the level of sort of mental intent that a person had to act with in order for the crime to be committed. And the question here under the statute is whether Trump corruptly tried to influence, obstruct, or impede the investigation. And corruptly means in the statute that you're acting in an improper way and you're trying to, you know, influence another person. I don't know that the evidence will show that he really was able to formulate that kind of intent in the first place. So what's going to happen?
Well, wait, now you're arguing he's too dumb to have done this.
Well, look, did he do terrible things? Yes. I think DJ's approach is 100% right. I don't think there was the intent to obstruct justice. I don't think there was the intent to collude with Russia in the way that
I don't hang on. Just
I,
to,
I don't think yeah, it
to,
was there.
To build on what Helena's saying, just looking at it from a different perspective, do we really think that Vladimir Putin is stupid enough to trust this entire operation to Donald Trump? No.
Oh, you guys, he's really, steer you guys are going completely off on around tangents.
Him. No, this the, but this is important though. Yeah. Because no, because I, what we need, what the American people need to understand is
what,
this.
What kind of an argument what, does that, DJ? The, how can you make a legal argument based on
I'm not making a legal argument to the American people.
There's a legal argument.
I'm giving
too,
what I'm doing is giving political advice to my new-ish party, which is be sure to build the political case for opposing an alliance with Russia, because it's very damaging to us. And Donald Trump is stupid enough to think an alliance with Russia is a good idea. And that's the problem. As Napoleon's police chief, Joseph Fouché, best said, it is worse than a crime. It is a mistake.
So I've been all week wanting to hear what Helena had to say about this, you know, this operation of the mind crime. Because again, I also don't think that, you know, I hope that you will be able to see your way past this. Is going to be pretty hard. It's not like he directly said you're going to do this. And the other thing is, you know, it seems to me that Trump, the way I was thinking about it, is that way back before they had the internet and you could like see what the price of every flight was, you know, the antitrust laws prohibited airlines from, you know, saying what their fares. Well, they didn't know what in order to price their fares because they couldn't collude. There's antitrust acts. They would just announce what their fares were going to be, like have a press conference to like let their competitors know. And then they would price fix around. And this is what President Obama did in April before, you know, so a year ago, April, in saying that, you know, he thought that Comey should find that there was no wrongdoing with Hillary Clinton's emails. And Trump is not that politically savvy to just do it out in the open. He actually invites him over for dinner on Valentine's Day, which, you know, at a minimum, he owes an apology to Mrs. Comey. Is there a Mrs. Comey?
But, yes, there is. Yes, there is.
But, you know, instead does it in this weird way. But I still don't know how you're going to get, you know, from I hope that you will find a way to move past this into obstruction of justice. It seems like there's a chasm there that will need to be filled in. And to be clear,
based on what we have seen and what we've seen may not be accurate, Trump actually went full Elsa here. He actually said he hoped Comey could let it go. So it wasn't a matter of move past us or anything. He actually apparently used the phrase, let this go.
Did he also build an ice castle and create a giant snow monster?
Oh, that's what you mean by Elsa. I just got that. I have seen Frozen. I have seen it, like, you know, only three times. But
Helena, you want to make a point.
Yeah, so look, the problem here is if you look at what the statute says and how they define corruptly and how they define you know, obstruction of justice generally, it's clear that Comey at the time did not think that Trump was trying to actively impede the investigation or obstruct it. He didn't raise his hand, right? He documented. Hold on, Kevin. Hold on. Did Comey come forth, right?
That argument is never going to fly. That he was supposed to from a single conversation with the president, that he was supposed to come forward and announce to the American people, the president has tried to obstruct this investigation, and I hereby resign my office. That is never going to fly. He did the exact thing you're supposed to do. He documented it, and he told other people about it.
And then he testified in front of Congress that he has not been pressured in any way
the administration. Apparently what he said was he was not pressured by anyone in the Justice Department. Donald Trump is not in the Justice Department.
Yeah. My point is, though, he continued the investigation, right? There's a query whether if someone actually had the investigation impeded and was corruptly influenced, right, that person, even if it wasn't their fault, would no longer be capable legally of pursuing the investigation in sort of upstanding way. He didn't think he was. He didn't think he was influenced at that level. So I think that's a problem.
The concept that you guys are going to turn this to be an investigation of Jim Comey is just, it's nonsense.
I hope we all know that there's no one, and now I sound like Trump himself. There's no one out there who dislikes Trump more than I do.
Well, I know, but there are Republicans that are saying what you're saying on television. I've heard it about 15 times already.
Okay.
And it's ludicrous that somehow James Comey is the one that's in the hot seat. But let me button this up with what I think is kind of a lighter observation on all of this. Assuming that you're right, DJ, and I think you probably are right, that there will be a 2020 election with Donald Trump as the Republican nominee, because if there is the chance of a impeachment in our future, it won't happen before then. But I think it's funny that if Bernie Sanders runs again, the socialist, can run to the right of the Republican Party on this issue.
I mean, look, what I hope happens – let me say this. I am nothing if not petty and vengeful, so it will take a long time for me to vote Republican again, if ever, or it will take a really great candidate. But I do think we need to write this out till 2020. I think there's nothing here. I don't think the 25th Amendment legalized coup that some conservatives are talking about is going to materialize. But what I do hope happens is that both parties look in 2020 at their role in creating this. This is not just the Republican Party's fault. This is the Democratic Party's fault. We don't have to relitigate Hillary. They put forth the single, I mean, I don't even have the words, least appealing, most divisive candidate they could have possibly found.
Yeah, which is why she was nominated or won the most popular woman in the world, the most admired woman in the world, some 17 to 20 times.
That's fine. We can look at the outcome of the 2016 election and see the Democratic Party's role in creating Trump, the Trump administration today. What I also hope comes out of this, though, is between now and 2020, I hope that the left sees the importance of a limited federal government, the importance of enumerated powers.
Helena, I'm trying that with the Democratic Party. It's going to be a much longer road to hoe than 3 years. I'm sorry.
I hope living in a banana republic between now and 2020 makes people appreciate the states as laboratories model, right? Makes people appreciate that you don't always know which side the federal government is going to be on, and therefore you don't want to give it free rein and a blank check to regulate everything from, you know, intrastate spider species in Texas. This is a real thing that's happening in the courts, to, you know, things bigger than that, and creates a states as laboratories argument. If you don't like taxes, move to Texas. If you don't like guns, move to New York. You want to smoke weed, go to Colorado. That's my hope and prayer for the banana republic that we're about to live in.
So let me ask you this. DJ put forth what he thinks the Democratic Party needs to do entering 2020. And I would imagine you also feel the same way about 2018, DJ.
Yes.
I'd like to ask Rebecca what you think the Democrats need to do to set themselves up for success in 2018. And then I'd like to throw in my idea. But Rebecca, you go first.
I think the Democrats need to stay as quiet as they possibly can, not make any waves, and just keep opposing these bizarro healthcare reform ideas that keep coming out of the Republican Party.
I think just the opposite. What I would do if I was Chuck Schumer is start something that will start in September, which is every single week I would go before the public in a press conference, and I would introduce the Democratic Bill of the Week. And it should be a bill that they can never get to the Senate floor or never get to the House floor, because obviously the GOP leaders there would not allow it to go to the floor. So they should take it to the American people. And it should be bills about ACA fixes, specific fixes that we can make to make the ACA work better. Democratic tax reform proposals. The Republicans aren't the only ones who have ideas about tax reform. Banking reform, Social Security reform, and they should call it the Democrats' to-do list. And they should sell it just like Trump sold his contract with the American voter. They should say, this is what we want to do if we get control of one or both chambers in 2018, and this is what we want to do if and when we get a Democratic president back in the White House.
And I say, if you can limit Chuck Schumer to getting in front of a camera to once a week, good luck to you. The most dangerous
good joke.
The most dangerous place in Washington is between Chuck Schumer between him and a camera.
And if what Theresa May has gone through over the last 3 days for doing just what you recommended, Kevin, Chuck Schumer will do nothing of the kind for the next 3.5 years. There are some things that the Democrats can do in a policy realm. I don't necessarily disagree with you. The better way to do it, though, is to take what the Republicans are doing and tweak it and amend it and force them to either abandon what they're doing because they don't like what you did to it, or try to find some way to criticize what you were doing as part of their larger agenda. The point is to show, look, because what Democrats need to do is they need to win over Republican voters in 2020. Not the white working class Trump and proletariat. Those folks are gone. They are not coming back. Stop looking for them. They need to win over traditional Republicans who voted Republican 20, 30, 40 years, who just voted for Donald Trump because he had an R next to his name and hoped that they would get a standard issue Republican administration. And they're sitting back facepalming and going, oh my God, I could not imagine it would be this crazy. And the best way to do that is to take the Republicanish proposals, tweak them here, tweak them there, utterly change them and make them more popular, whatever it is, to show to those voters, hey, look, you can vote for a Democrat in 2020. It's okay. You're not going to give up on everything that made you a Republican. There's some things we agree with, some things we're going to have to disagree. But for God's sakes, don't vote for this madman again.
DJ, since you started with Theresa May, I have a challenge for you. For the remainder of the episode, the only British people you may refer to are the Spice Girls, Pippa and Kate Middleton, or Harry Potter. That's it.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, I mean, this is a moment for real reflection. Was Pippa Middleton's wedding dress more attractive than her bridesmaid's dress in her sister's wedding? How do we
wrong
feel
question,
about
Rebecca.
Kate's dress?
Right, Rebecca, wrong question. Was Pippa's dress better than Kate's dress? That's the question.
Oh, Kate's dress all the way.
Okay, I'm going to weigh in on this and say I don't know what her bridesmaids or anybody's bridesmaids wore, but I did, just before we went on this podcast, happen to see a little video clip of the actual wedding ceremony, and whoever that was in there in that white dress, she looked stunning. That's all I know.
All right, well, I want to go back to just a few minutes ago that – and, you know, for what it's worth, what I think of Democrat strategy in 2018 and 2020 is I'm going to agree with, first of all, Kevin, that they need to do something besides we're not Trump, because that did not work in 2016. And secondly, I'm going to agree with Rebecca that it is also good for them if they can keep Schumer away from the cameras, you know, or limit it to just once a week.
Did you guys see the picture of Schumer and Ben Sasse outside Senator Sasse outside
yes,
the Senate?
Yes.
And like Sasse is sitting there in running clothes, and Schumer clearly had just walked out, and he's headed home for the evening.
His hair is all disheveled.
And Sasse tweeted, he's like, oh my God, Chuck Schumer and I look like we're smoking reefer outside a wedding.
Okay, since everyone else gave their piece, in one sentence, I'll drop my bomb and then move away from it. What the Democrats should do in 2020 is they should move away from the stance that they've taken on abortion. They should move a little bit to the right, open up the party to other people who would otherwise be on board if it weren't for the hard line, pretty much right up until the moment of birth approach that they take.
Okay, well, let's not get into that, but point made, a great conversation for another podcast. And by the way, a lot of Democrats who I think are agreeing with you these days.
Nancy Pelosi is agreeing with you these days. My uterus doesn't agree, but Nancy Pelosi does.
So changing the topic, because there was so much in the fake news this week that here's something that should be fake news, but unfortunately isn't. Callista Gingrich has been named the ambassador to the Vatican. Now, we all know how and why she got this appointment, but what do we think of it?
What has Callista Gingrich done since quitting the agriculture committee in the House, where she was a clerk?
Who has she done?
No, we know who she did before she quit, but she left the committee after marrying Newt, who insisted on getting an annulment from wife number two. I don't know what he's done about wife number one. He got an annulment so that he could marry Callista, married her, and I don't even know what she's been doing since that, besides being Mrs. Gingrich. Like, is she qualified to be an ambassador? Does she have any skills?
Well, anybody is qualified. I mean, probably people less qualified than her have been named ambassadors to countries. But I'm wondering, do you think that Trump made her the ambassador to the Vatican because they wanted it, but they knew with his personal life, he couldn't be the ambassador to the Vatican?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to get Newt out of the country.
Oh, I think that they want this desperately. I mean, I think the Gingriches are going to love this. They're going to move to Rome.
I guess the theory was that if she inspired, you know, Newt to, you know, convert and, you know.
No.
Newt was always Catholic, wasn't he?
No, 2009. Yes. He converted to marry her.
Every good Southern hypocritical Republican outside of Louisiana, he was a Baptist.
Well, with that, we have to bring this podcast to a close. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so all of your friends can discover us as well. And if you would like to join our political debate between shows, we're all in this Facebook group called Open Fire, where people come and post links and talk about politics and argue and fight with each other, just like we do, but not as kindly. But we're all there. We'd love to see you there, too.
We also have the From Across the Pond page on Facebook for Americans who obsess about British politics as nuttily as I do.
And by the way, I should also mention stayathomepundit.com, which is a website that Rebecca blogs on, and people should check that out. Molly, Helena, anything you guys would like to plug?
My husband makes amazing gelato. Amazing. We're thinking of monetizing it. So low calorie, all natural.